Pacific Wall. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. Welcome back here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And we're a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And we take you through the looking glass to find that truth sometime. Coming up, we have Jack Armstrong, who's a liberal blogger. He's going to be joining us in just a moment to talk about Iran and President Obama and his reaction to that. We haven't really done a whole lot of foreign affairs on the program lately, but we'll get Jack on the line from Minneapolis to talk about that, because the president, as you know, today made an announcement concerning new sanctions against Iran and their nuclear program. Our website, philhendryshow.com, doing a little bit of maintenance earlier tonight on it. So if you flipped it on, there you saw Elaine and you heard Joey. And some guy says to me, hey, you know, it's supposed to be uncensored. Yeah, it usually is uncensored unless I have people here who, you know, would rather not have the stuff they're talking about go out over the air for privacy purposes. So we turn the mic down. So why don't you take a chill, Mike? You advertise it. You know what? People like that, I would rather not have you subscribe to my site. Take a flying leap, man. Get out of my world.
You said that you would...
Punk face. And by the way, that car that you use as a profile pic on Facebook looks a little...
looks Mexican.
Shut up. I think he is Mexican. Anyway, I'm kidding about the car. It looks nice. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. On the line with us is Jack Armstrong from Minneapolis. Jack, this morning we heard President Obama, when I flipped on the TV this morning anyway, say that fresh UN Security Council sanctions against Iran send an unmistakable message to that country over its nuclear program. Your comments?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think that the president said it, and I think that what the president said was dead on, that this is unmistakable, very direct, and it's very, very tough language. I love the president showing the world, particularly these conservatives who don't think that that he has what it takes to be a commander in chief. Let me tell you something. I think we saw a guy here today what I think is going to be a great commander in chief. And the way that Barack Obama expressed himself today, he said it was an unmistakable message that there was going to be a very, very difficult. There's going to be some very difficult sanctions if they don't come through, you know, and begin to adhere to the UN resolutions. Now, this resolution, the president said, I'm going to quote him right now, Phil. He says he put in place the toughest sanctions ever faced by the Iranian government, and it sends an unmistakable message, like what you said, about the international community's commitment to stopping the spread of nuclear weapon, telling reporters at the White House. I mean, the resolution is very strong. The other thing that I wrote in the blog today that I think has to be taken into consideration is the idea that President Obama is doing this the right way. We looked at George Bush doing things the wrong way when he went into Iraq, doing so because he thought maybe there was some weapons of destruction, and we find out that though there wasn't when the soldiers went in there. I know the point that you made to me when we were having breakfast the other morning. You said, well, the American soldiers went and did their own inspection. That is really not a fair point, because...
No, all I said was that the soldiers went and did their own inspection. You'd never know that they didn't have weapons of mass destruction unless we'd invaded.
No, I knew that. No, that's not true at all, because I think most of us knew. You know.
No, you didn't know for sure.
I didn't know for sure, but the point I think that is a much, much larger point. I didn't know for sure, and when the soldiers went in and they checked and they found that there wasn't none, then we knew for sure. But still, it was it was very illegal. Now here is Obama, and Obama is going to show George Bush how to do it. And what do I mean by that? I mean that Obama is going to send into Iran a military strike if Iran doesn't adhere to the UN resolutions. He'll have the UN and he will have them behind him if Iran doesn't adhere to the UN resolutions. Then we can have a military strike, and then you are going to see how you do it right, as opposed to Bush, who done it wrong. Bush done it wrong when he sent the troops in without finding out once and for all whether or not there was a weapon of destruction. Obama will send, and I'm not saying he's going to, but right now we don't know, but right now he's not going to, but Obama will send into Iran troops once he finds out about a nuclear bomb, and also when they don't do the UN resolutions. See, so that's the difference, really, between Barack Obama and George Bush.
Well, wait, hold it just a second here. You're talking about when the Iran doesn't adhere to UN resolutions. Well, Iraq didn't adhere to UN resolutions, and so the United States attacked.
But, you know, the United States attacked, and you're right about Iraq not going with the UN resolutions. You're right about that. Okay, but you're wrong. Here's where you're wrong. Iraq didn't go with the UN resolutions, but the United States didn't know whether Iraq had a weapon of destruction or if it was right of them to go. We, in the liberal movement here, the Democratic Party, we have a president who is saying, you got to go with the UN resolution. Okay, they're not going to do that. But we also know that when they don't do that, we know they got nuclear weapons because we know that they have been enhancing the process, and they have I heard the president today say that they've got it's a centrifugal force. You know what I mean by the centrifugal force, Phil?
It's a centrifuge, yeah. I think they've gone for, they are utilizing it more and more and more and more, I think is what the president said.
Well, okay. So we know that that's what they're doing. So what I'm saying here, and I'm trying to be clear. Obama is anything but some sort of a little Mary Jane. Obama is going to be hardcore on Iran, but he's going to do it better than Bush did it, because Bush went in, he didn't even know. Obama's going to go in because he knows. And that is going to be Barack Obama showing George Bush how to get things done, how to go in and you know what I mean? In other words, deliver a little bit of pain. But you do it when you know what you're talking about. And I want to say there were 12 votes in favor in the United Nations today. It received the least amount of support of the four Iran sanction resolutions adopted since 2006. But President Obama vowed he's going to make them stick.
Oh, now, that's very interesting. Obama says he's going to make them stick. How's he going to do that?
Well, I'll quote the president. He said, we'll ensure these sanctions are vigorously enforced just as we continue to refine and enforce our own sanctions on Iran. And there's no doubt. There's no double standard at play, he said. He said we made it clear time and again that...
This sounds just like President Bush trying to get Iraq to adhere to these resolutions, trying to get Iraq to play ball, and Iraq didn't play ball.
Yeah, but see, Bush... Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
No, Bush, you're right about that. But Bush didn't have the weapon of mass destruction. Obama's got the nuclear bombs that everybody knows that that's what they're building. Bush didn't have no weapon of destruction. Obama's got the nuclear bombs that everybody knows what they're building. And that's the difference. And when I wrote my blog for the Huffington Post today, and I pointed that out, a lot of people responded very favorably. They said, you know, for the first time, you're the very first person to say that this man Obama is, he knows what he's doing, and he can be a very strong president and not weak like they say. So I think we took a big step forward today.
Who took a big step forward today, though, Jack?
I thought the country took a big step forward.
Because it sounds to me like you're saying that the Democratic Party took a big step forward, the Progressive Movement took a big step forward.
Well, the Progressive Movement took a big step forward because we've got a president that is not some punk like what they were saying that he was, right? And he's not some punk, and he's going to do what he got to do. You know, there's a great movie called Hoffa, if you've ever seen the movie Hoffa. And in that movie is Jack Nicholson, and he plays Hoffa. He says, I'm going to do what I got to do, get union back. Well, Obama going to do what he got to do, get get the bombs and the nuclear weapons away from Iran.
What did he say?
He said he's going to do what he got to do to get the bombs.
No, in the movie Hoffa.
In the movie Hoffa, Jack Nicholson plays Hoffa.
Right.
And he says, I think the line is, I'm going to do what I got to do, get union back. Okay?
I'm going to do what I got to do, get union back.
No, he was talking very fast because Jimmy Hoffa come from New York or from Detroit or something. So he was a tough guy. But and that's what I'm saying. I don't think you should. And by the way, Jimmy Hoffa was a Democrat. Okay.
Yeah, he was a labor guy.
Okay. He wasn't any baby. You know, he said, I'm going to do what I got to do, get union back.
And it sounds like an idiot talking, if you want my honest opinion, Dick. He can't even put an English sentence together.
No, Jimmy Hoffa was an idiot.
Well, no, I don't think Jimmy Hoffa was an idiot. I think the way they represented him in that one line, and I'm sure it was Jack Nicholson who was delivering the line as the actor. The point that I'm making here, though, is the following thing. You say that the progressives now have a president who's a real hard ass. We haven't seen anything. So far, what I've heard President Obama do is almost, I mean, it just right down the line mimics what President Bush did with Iraq and President Clinton and Bush number one.
No.
It does, Jack, if you listen to these guys talking about stronger sanctions, vigorously enforced, yada, yada, yada.
No, because we know now that we've got to back it up with the military might. And I guess you're going to say that's because Bush showed them how. I think Obama's going to show how, and not Bush.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Always interesting to have Jack Armstrong on with us from the Huffington Post and from the Daily Coast. He's a liberal pollster. He's on our show quite a bit. As we talk about Barack Obama, President Obama's news conference today on Iran and the sanctions that the United Nations voted on, sanctions that the United States has in place itself, and the fact that, quote, it sends an unmistakable message. Is this a stronger reaction than a smarter reaction to Iran by President Obama than the reaction of President Bush to Iraq? 877-876-PHIL is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Jack Armstrong with us here talking about Barack Obama's press conference today on Iran. Where are you right now, Jack?
Well, I'm in a restaurant in Minneapolis. Actually, I'm in Lower Town, St. Paul, at Dixie's. And I'm talking to a lot of old friends of ours here from the Twin Cities in St. Paul. And just came from a meeting where I was talking to Jim Gold, who is an old friend of yours, Phil.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's not doing very good because he just lost an assembly seat in the state of Minnesota. And there's this anti-incumbent mood. And so something's got to happen between now and November. And I think what's going to happen is that the country is going to see that Barack Obama is not some pushover. That's a smarter guy when it comes to the international relations, right?
Well, what do you think? How do you think he's doing in terms of domestic issues?
Well, I mean, I think he's doing fine, but I think that there's no winning right now because you know when you look at the British Petroleum situation down there in the Gulf, okay, that's a very good example of what I'm talking about. Barack Obama is the president of the United States. He doesn't own British Petroleum, okay? So what's he going to do other than when he's called upon to make a decision about a federal emergency? When he's called upon to do something like that, then he's going to do it. But the first responsibility lies with the company. And I said this to Gold, and I said it to that friend of his who's a conservative. You know the guy, I'm trying to remember his name, was Cap... Bob Capp?
Bob Capp's a Republican.
That's right. And I said to him, you know, you guys want less government, but then as soon as the oil starts to leak, then you want to have the government. So what is it? And he said, well, the government, that's when we need the government, when there's an emergency. I said, wait a minute, every time a problem happens, the government's going to jump in? This is a clear failure of the private sector called British Petroleum, a private company, the private sector. This is the meat of the conservative movement. These are the people the conservatives say should have less government. And what has British Petroleum done? They have effectively rendered the federal government more powerful because even people like Michelle Bachmann, who is supposedly a conservative, she wants more government oversight. She's going to want more government regulation. British Petroleum, a private company, you know, and I followed him out of the restaurant. Cap, I said, you know what I'm saying. He didn't want to hear it, you know.
And where were you guys eating?
We were over on Dixie. And we were at Dixie's on Main.
Okay, and he did what?
He didn't want to hear it. He, you're wrong. He got up from the table. He starts to move out to his car. I said, no. Look, British Petroleum has caused bigger government. There's going to be government regulations. There's going to be government laws. They're going to be in the offices of every big oil company from here on out. British Petroleum caused that to happen. And he's like covering his ears up.
What do you mean he's covering his ears up? He's got his hands over his ears?
I swear by hand to God, my hands, may my children have their eyes put out by, you know, playing sports or, you know, an accident at school. And
oh, for God's sake, Jack, I'm just asking you, did the man...
I'm telling you, he did. He put
his hands over his ears.
Put his hands over his ears. No. And I said, you, Mr. Conservative, are going to have to deal with the fact that a private business doing what the conservative movement wanted them to do, offshore oil drilling, by their negligence, they've created an even bigger government bureaucracy. Not a lesser of a bureaucracy, but a bigger. And my hand to God, I love my wife. May she die in a rail accident.
Why are you being so graphic?
I want you to know that I'm telling you the truth.
No, I believe you. So he's got his hands over his ears. He didn't want to hear this.
He didn't want to hear it. And I think tonight, Phil, when you look at the conservative movement in America, there's a lot of people what got their hands over their ears. They are saying, no, la, 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 la. You know how that old joke on Saturday Night Live, the guy go, la, 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 you know?
Yeah, they don't want to hear what the people are saying.
They don't want to hear what the people are saying, which is that, no, it wasn't Barack Obama that causes a big, you know, everybody says, what's Barack Obama doing? How do you think Barack Obama and the Democratic Congress is going to respond to British Petroleum and the accidents? They're going to pass more laws. And Gold says to me, shut up. And I said, laws. I looked at him. I said, laws, Bob, more laws, more federal laws. And I said, go ahead, why don't you squirt me a couple? Huh? You going to cry? I'm telling you.
Well, it sounded to me like you were hounding this man, okay? Don't you think that you had already made your point?
No, let me tell you about making a point, my friend. When you have these conservatives telling you that Barack Obama this and Barack Obama that, and right under their nose is a private company that has created such a disaster that only a fool could believe that Barack Obama had anything to do with it. And my colleague here in Minnesota, this Michelle Bachmann, this is going to kill her. Her career is over. Her career is over because she sounds so stupid. No one is going to want to come within 100 yards of her unless it's to make a, you know, I shouldn't say, but unless it's they want to have, they think maybe they can make a play for her or something.
That's really respectful.
But that's the only reason why they want to go near her, because she's not making no sense. She's not making no sense. So he left, and I said, why don't you go home and squirt me a few. And
what does that mean? Was he? You thought he was crying?
Looked like he was going to cry to me, yeah.
Well, I can't disagree with a lot of what you've been saying here. I don't think that hounding people is going to necessarily make you friends, you know.
Let me tell you, we're not going to make any friends anyway. Conservatives never going to make no friends with a progressive. They're always going to believe that they know best. Less government. So you just let those companies do whatever they want to do. The number one reason why we got so many federal regulations and federal laws and federal restrictions is because these companies that were allowed to act and allowed to act with freedom and impunity and were allowed to make a profit and to, you know, the unrestrained marketplace, those guys are the ones that eventually lock the back door and you see women jumping out of a building on fire, or you see oil splashing up on a beach, or you see some guy trying to stop a railroad train with his feet, or you see a guy trying to land an airplane and with no power and no wings. And
oh, boy. I don't know what you're referencing.
You know what I mean.
No, I don't know what you mean. I know what you mean about the burning building, but Jack Armstrong joining us, and we're talking here about the British Petroleum spill. And one point that he made that was obviously interesting that the reason for so much federal regulation is the very reason that businesses have been allowed to operate, like a British Petroleum. Have they been allowed to go out and make some money, and they wind up creating these disasters? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Phil, you can go to our website, philhenryshow.com, and watch live streaming video and listen to live streaming audio of the show tonight. And you can see me burying my face in my hands.
What's going on with you anyway, man?
Had Elaine in here, and I think she's going to straighten it out, and that's where that's at, you know. But if I'm going deaf, I'm going deaf, you know.
Well, that guy you knew, and he got deaf.
I don't want to mention any names, okay? So very famous disc jockey that I knew here in L.A., and he went deaf.
Yeah, what was his name?
I just got done saying I don't want to mention any names.
Yeah, but who was it?
Are you deaf or something, man? I said I don't want to mention any names.
No, but I mean, like, what did he look like?
Yeah, give us a, get, like, how tall was he?
Get out of here, how tall was he? Anyway, a very famous DJ that I worked with in the later years of his life, which is kind of the way it is when you're coming up in radio or TV or anything. The guys that you liked, the people that you admired, if you make it far enough, you say, wow, look at this. I'm standing in the same hallway with this cat that I used to really like. But this dude was deaf. I mean, literally was deaf. I mean, he's one of these guys. You come up, hey, man, how you doing? What's up, hey, baby? I said, how you doing? Yeah, yeah, real good, baby. And so he was deaf. And, you know, that comes from years and years and years of wearing headphones. Now, maybe one of the reasons why I'm not going deaf is because I do a talk show. And so there isn't the constants of music. And that's good because I like to think I've got a very good ear, and as such, there's certain things that you need to hear when you're doing a radio show. That's why we wear headphones. Maybe deaf. So
what's that?
I said I think I might be deaf.
Can't hear you.
Kick your ass. How about that?
Just making a joke.
Top 10 macho movies. Here we go. Number one. This is from the Toronto Sun. Kevin Williamson, in honor of the release of A-Team this week. Here are the top 10 macho movies. Or Men on a Mission movies, according to the Toronto Sun. Number one, The Wild Bunch. I don't know, Toronto Sun. The Wild Bunch is fine. I don't even know if, of course, quite frankly, taking these in this order, I think you didn't mean this to be 1 through 10, did you? You're just saying that these are the top 10, but you don't have them in any particular order. Okay, that's fine. Anyway, The Wild Bunch. Now, that movie came out in 1969. It was a Sam Peckinpah movie. If you know anything about Sam Peckinpah, that's pretty much what, you know, Peckinpah.
That's dirty.
Anyway, wow, man.
Boy, that's dirty.
Boy.
Well.
Sam Peckinpah's End of Era saga follows the waning days of a group of middle-aged outlaws who realize their way of life soon will be extinct, paved over by the 20th century. As is true of most of Peckinpah's work, it's brutal, it's disreputable, and blood-soaked. Early on, you suspect no one's going to get out of the story alive. It's like life that way. This is the writing of Mr. Williamson, the Toronto Sun. The other thing about the maybe true of the Toronto Sun and the Wild Bunch, is there's a guy who says, those are men up there, and what have I got here? A bunch of chicken-stealing, egg-sucking gutter trash.
Right.
Right. Now then, that's Robert Ryan speaking. The next movie on the list is The Magnificent Seven, and I don't remember ever watching that movie.
Are you kidding me, man? Everybody, like the music, dun, 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 you know that.
You never saw, I bet you don't even remember seeing that movie, do you?
No, I'm too young.
Adam, I know about it. The Magnificent Seven is from Japan, right?
No, it's not from Japan. It's based upon The Seven Samurai, which was a Akira Kurosawa movie. I don't know The Magnificent Seven. I wouldn't know it, man, although that, you know, it had a big... I just don't know the movie. I just don't know the movie. Is it outlaws? Are they lawmen? I don't know anything about it. Now, Escape from New York, that's another movie that I could have... I remember, I think I saw it like once or twice. It was state-of-the-art science fiction movie for the early 1980s, Escape from New York. That, Blade Runner, although Blade Runner, quite frankly, Blade Runner was a far more interesting story, and in actuality, had better effects. Alien was a way more interesting story and had better effects, but they weren't really dude movies, you know. Although I don't know why Alien wasn't a dude movie, although, you know, the hero was a chick.
Yeah, well, Sigourney Weaver, except you see her underwear and everything, that's pretty neat, you know.
Yeah, but she didn't have any butt.
Oh, well, let's not talk about how much butt she had, okay? Alien was a good flick, but it's not a guy movie as in Men on a Mission, so I understand what they're saying there. But Escape from New York had Kurt Russell and the President of the United States. His pod crash lands into a portion of New York which has been walled off. You have to understand that this was the fear in the early 1980s, that crime was so out of control that there was such a violent subculture in our country that they literally would take over sections of, this was the fear, that they would take over sections of the city, and those parts of the city would have to be walled off, and the scum just kind of kept inside, right?
Yeah.
So, in the film Escape from New York, that's what happens. Either a section of New York or the entire city of New York has been walled off because it's such a scum-filled, you know, just a rat hole. And the President of the United States happens to be flying over this area, and something happens to the plane, and so his escape pod...
Go down and land there?
It lands there in New York, in the scumbag part of New York.
But you got to go get him out of scumbag.
They got to get him out of a scumbag.
He means get him out of scumbag town.
Yeah.
Scumbag town. Yeah, they got to go get him. Kurt Russell's the guy who is sent to get the president. Is it Donald Pleasance that plays the president? Seems kind of weird, a British actor, but maybe. Donald Pleasance is always, he's always a pleasant sight in these movies, and I think it is. So it's an interesting movie. And so he goes into this scumbag part of New York. And, of course, it's what every moviegoer wanted to see in the early 1980s. And quite frankly, it's what every moviegoer wanted to see in the 1970s, which was like a good guy beating the crap out of a whole lot of bad guys. That's why Dirty Harry movies were so big. That's why the Death Wish movies with Charles Bronson were so big. And that's why the Escape from New York. And later, I think there was one called Escape from L.A. or something.
I think there was, but I think it blew a lot.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. Number four on the list is The Dirty Dozen. This is a film that the movie Inglourious Basterds sort of pays homage to. It's about a bunch of guys who are prison brig inmates. They're in the military prison for a variety of problems. And the guy that's sent to whip their ass into shape is Lee Marvin, who's like the all-time badass tough guy actor. I mean, there isn't a cat tougher than Lee Marvin.
Who?
You guys don't know Lee Marvin.
I don't know. I'm not familiar, but...
Lee Marvin was he was great. Just never mind. Just don't even, if either one of you guys says anything.
No, I never heard of Lee Marvin, but you say good.
Lee Marvin was great. Not good, great. He was the greatest badass tough guy actor ever in the history of movies. You know why?
Why?
Because he actually had been in combat. I think he got shot in the butt by a Jap or something. Excuse me, I should say Japanese. And
oh, big wow, I got shot in the butt. I got shot in the butt.
All right, you got shot in the butt, too. In any event, he was a good actor. So he was in The Dirty Dozen, and he takes this... He finally finds 12 guys. These 12 inmates, you know, these 12 criminals, these military criminals. And he whips them into shape, and they airdrop the night before the D-Day invasion.
You said evasion, like we were going to evade them.
Oh, is that what I said, bud? That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not nice.
Well, you did.
Yeah, the D-Day evasion. That's right.
You were going to evade him?
Yeah, that's what we were going to do on D-Day, man. We were going to run away from the Germans. All right, D-Day, let's go.
That would have been great.
What a dumbass. So they're part of the big paratroop drop before the night before D-Day, this Dirty Dozen, and they drop. What's their mission? Their mission is to go find this chateau... Or a chalet, or however they say it. And it's a big-ass mansion, right?
Yeah, and a whole bunch of Germans and everything.
Right. There's a bunch of German officers, and they're the high-level cats, and they say, go in and kill as many of them as you can. These are the high-level German generals. These are the guys who will be the brains behind the German military command, and so go in and kill them. And the Dirty Dozen, they go in. Now, one of the great characters in that film is Telly Savalas. He plays Maggot, who is a woman hater. He hates women from a mad, crazy, religious kind of mania. And he chews the scenery up. He's fantastic. So go see Dirty Dozen. or Baker's Dozen, whatever you want to see.
When does Baker's Dozen come out?
I think Baker's Dozen was playing in tandem with Dirty Dozen. I'm kidding, man, okay?
Yeah. Oh.
Go see Baker's Dozen. Reservoir Dogs is number 5, you know it, famous for the ear-cutting-off scene. Fantastic movie. Harvey Keitel, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen is just a maniac. He's as scary as they get. Is it Chris Penn?
Yeah, Chris Penn, his butt's hanging out. He's such a fat ass.
Okay, that's fine, but I don't need to know about that, okay?
Yeah, but Chris Penn is a fat ass.
All right, he's a fat ass. Chris Penn, who's a fat ass, and Lawrence Tierney, who plays the older, you know, gangster who's training these guys to knock off this jewelry store. And Lawrence Tierney has been around since the 40s and 30s, and he played John Dillinger in a movie in the 1940s. If you see Lawrence Tierney in one of his early movies, you don't even know it's the same cat. I mean, obviously, much, much younger guy. The next movie is Glengarry Glen Ross. This is a really great movie. What a great cast. And God, I just realized I've seen all of these movies.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've seen just about every one of them except the one about the Magnificent Seven and everything.
Yeah, I didn't see that. Glengarry Glen Ross, it's got a great cast. And it's got Jack Lemmon on the one end. It's got Al Pacino. It's got Kevin Spacey. It's got Ed Harris. It's got Alan Alda. You know, really amazing cast of guys. Yeah, I'm probably missing some people, but... Oh, and then Alec Baldwin... Regardless of what you think of Alec Baldwin, you may say, oh, I don't like his movies or I don't like him or what. He kicks ass in this movie in just one scene. Alec Baldwin has one scene in Glengarry Glen Ross, and he kicks everybody's ass in this scene. You got to see. I tell you, it's worth it just to see the Alec Baldwin scene. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I like that one scene to talk about the car.
He's got his watch on, and he looks at, I love it. It's Alec Baldwin. He's telling all these sales guys what a bunch of slobs they are, and they can't sell anything, and they're crying, and why don't you guys get out and get some work done? Why don't you get out and sell? Be some men, right? So he takes some crap from Ed Harris, goes, I don't have to sit and listen to this. So Baldwin goes over to him, rolls up his sleeve, and in a classic Alec Baldwin way says, you see this watch? It's worth more than your car. Now, just the way that he said it, that...
That's a pretty funny line about wanting to do that guy's wife, too.
What was that?
What line was that?
That wasn't in that movie, huh?
No, it wasn't in that movie. What movie are you talking about?
I don't know, but when you get to it...
You get out of here when I get to it. Number 7, The Warriors. That's a movie I didn't see, I didn't want to see, and I think, frankly, it sucks. And how you put that on this list, Mr. Williamson, The Warriors sucked. Do you understand? Don't give me this bull crap about how it does coming-of-age movie or what. It sucked. Predator, that was a great flick, is number 8. Number 9, The Longest Yard, the original, great flick. And then, weirdly, number 10, Apocalypse Now. I don't know, man. Yeah, okay. But I can tell you this, and I think Dale Dye, you know, echoed it, and a lot of guys, and my own father went to see it with me. Any guy who saw Apocalypse Now who had been through the Vietnam War or been through any kind of combat in war walked out of that movie thinking it was just a turd. I mean, so I don't know. Probably they'd walk out of the freaking Wild Bunch and Reservoir Dogs the same way. So I don't know what I'm referencing. But the fact is, it was not a movie that was universally respected by dudes. All right, the world famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. And coming back, a woman's charged with adultery in New York City. Just thought we'd tell you that. Plus, and why is that such a big deal that a woman was? Oh, it was in a park. That's why. I think that's where it was. And let's see. Plus, a drunk woman calls 911 looking for a husband. It's the world famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
That's Phil ridiculous.
Saving Ryan.
First of all, it's not called Saving Ryan. Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah, what about that?
I mean, we could sit here all day. I'm talking to Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here about the iconic macho movies. You know, we're just reading this list. we could sit here all day, and you could make a very good point.
They don't have no Dirty Harry or anything like that.
Dirty Harry is not, according to this guy that made this list.
Yeah, what about Dirty Harry and another one, Unforgiven?
Well, hold on for a minute. According to the guy that made this list, that's what he means by macho movie is Men on a Mission, okay?
Yeah.
How's it Men on a Mission, Dirty Harry?
Well, he had a partner.
Yeah, that doesn't make any difference. It had a partner. Dirty Harry's about Dirty Harry, okay?
Yeah, but don't you think that movie is one of the biggest ones that was ever made?
I think Dirty Harry's huge. Yeah, it's a huge, talk about iconic, but it's not iconic in terms of Men on a Mission. It's a single lone cop who goes out and kicks ass, and it was really wildly popular. Yeah, I get it, but it just, what do you want me to say, man? You're going to stick every movie that you guys can think of?
What about Ryan?
What do you mean Ryan? Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah.
You guys talk with such shorthand, man.
I don't know what it's called, Ryan or Save Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, Saving Private Ryan.
You think that's iconic? You think it's...
What, I don't even know what you mean, iconic.
Yeah, what's that mean? Use a word like iconic. Are you talking about how bitchin' it is?
Yeah, sort of. I'm talking about how bitchin' it is. What I'm saying is, Saving Private Ryan was a great flick, okay? I mean, it's inspired a lot of war movies. It's inspired the production values of a lot of war movies. It's brought realism to a whole new level, man, in terms of war movies. But... And the story is cool. The thing about Saving Private Ryan that was cool was it brought World War II. World War II came alive for an entire generation of people that really was just sort of a vague black and white movie that they would see or every now and again. And it showed these soldiers as real people. I don't know how you fit that into this list, though. It's a great... These movies, to be honest with you, an argument can be made that while they are macho movies, they aren't really that great in terms of the acting...
What are you talking about? Were you like The Longest Yard? That was great acting.
The Longest Yard? The Longest Yard was fine. It wasn't... It was a great story. Glengarry Glen Ross, that was great acting. Reservoir Dogs, eh. Dirty Dozen, I don't know. You know?
Yeah, so you... But you don't want to put Ryan or Unforgiven.
Unforgiven? I don't know, man. Unforgiven. It was like three guys... I don't think that... I think Unforgiven had too much of a moral to it, too much of a non-violence thing going, right? So most guys are going to look at that and go, yeah, that's real great. That's an art movie, you know?
Yeah, like they're like they're, it's going to be watched at the can, or in the can.
It's going to be watched in the can.
What do you mean?
In the can.
You're going to watch Unforgiven in the can?
Yeah, where they have the festivals.
Are you talking about the Cannes Music, the film festival?
Yeah.
Man.
What?
Watch it in the can. Woman caught having sex in a park charged with adultery in New York. A woman arrested for public lewdness for allegedly having sex in a park is facing a surprising additional charge, cheating on her husband. How dare they? No, this wasn't in a Muslim country far away. It's happening in New York. Suzanne Corona, a 41-year-old woman from Batavia, New York, just east of Buffalo, was busted along with 29-year-old Justin Amend last week, according to police.
And Jason Antebi was...
You shut up. Jason Antebi was standing there watching, and then he'd take his turn. No, the pair allegedly were having... Just kidding around. The pair were allegedly having sex on a picnic table near a playground in Farrell Park just after 5 p.m., on Friday, according to WHAM Channel 13, according to police, several parents and children that were nearby. Wow. You know, that's kind of, you know, you got to clean your act up a little bit, man. That's just no good, you know.
People ought to be free to love, though.
Oh, get out of here with that free to love, man. That jazz, having sex in front of kids, that's just nowhere. No way. Anyway... The police officer asked them what they were doing, and they said just talking, and obviously they weren't just talking, according to Officer Eric Hill of the Batavia Police Department. Well, this is in, they say in New York, this is New York State. Can I, you know, Michael Sheridan of the Daily Staff, I guess this guy's the Daily News. Hey, Michael, you ought to know better. You're a New York writer. When you say New York, everybody thinks of New York City. You're talking about Batavia, New York. Anyway, both have been charged with public lewdness. When it was discovered that Corona was married, the adultery charge was added. She faces up to 90 days in jail. How do you like that? In court on Tuesday, Corona did not enter a plea but vowed to fight the constitutionality of the charge. One of the reasons you don't see this charge more often is that the law in New York State requires that there must be corroboration, according to the Genesee County District Attorney Larry Friedman. Well, there were a whole bunch of cops that saw it so they could corroborate it because the alleged act took place in a public park in full view of several witnesses as well as the cops. There was, quote, no basis not to file the charge, said Friedman. According to court papers obtained by WHAM, Corona told police at the time of her arrest, I know what I did was inappropriate and I apologize, but you'd understand if you knew what my life was like. She told officers her husband is transgender and the two had never had any sex. I think we have this lady's comments here.
We were not naked on a picnic table. We were sitting there on the bench, fully clothed.
Bull crap. All right. World famous Phil Hendry show.
Oh, she said she had clothes on.
Phil Hendry.